hello and welcome in again to the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harland. I am your co-host, Brian Brown. We are in the beautiful and historic B.B. McKinney Studios.
Here we are.
High atop the Lifeway Tower.
You know, we really ought to sing a B.B. hymn right now.
Well, we don't have a pitch pipe, and, you know, that could be a problem.
Well, we won't do it.
But they are beautiful, they're majestic, and it's a gorgeous spring day outside.
Beautiful
check
day.
Local listings, wherever you might be listening, but here in Nashville,
it's
Tennessee.
It's gorgeous.
Gorgeous outside.
We've had plenty of rain this spring, Brother Brian.
We have had biblical rain.
Yes, we have.
I was looking for the ark at any moment to be floating down the Cumberland.
When the animals start lining up two by two, you know you've had a lot of rain.
Absolutely. But Mike, we're not here to talk about
the weather forecast.
We've got a special guest and an important topic that I'm so excited about.
Would you like me to introduce? I am thrilled today. And Jay, I want you to just go ahead and say hello so everybody can get used to your great voice. But Jay Strother, the pastor at the church at Station Hill, which is in Thompson Station or Spring Hill, kind of in between.
We started right on the town line, hence my incredible creativity
with
coming up with that name.
Station Hill. Yeah, aren't you glad that you weren't in Gallatin and up in Hendersonville? What would you have called that? Galhen something? I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
Maybe something better.
Jay Strother. Jay, welcome to Worship Life Podcast. And I've been wanting to have you in here for a while to talk to you because I am a huge fan of what is happening in your church there at the Church of Station Hill. Before we get into those specifics, though, I wanted people to just know a little more about you.
Sure.
You've been a part of Brentwood Baptist Church for a long time. And if you don't mind, by the way, Jay's the pastor of the Church at Station Hill. Did I say that already, Brian?
You did. I think our audience would be interested to know who his worship leader is.
Well,
there,
I mean, as far as we know, it's still Cliff Duren.
When he shows up.
Yeah, exactly. Our audience.
You know, he's all right. We keep him
he's
around.
All right. He's all right. Well, everybody knows the reason you work with Cliff Duren is to hear April sing.
We all know that. Amen, brother.
We all know that.
Cliff outpunted his coverage. Yeah.
Amening us wherever he is.
He is. So, and Cliff, I think, listens to our podcast.
Religiously.
Cliff's been a guest on our podcast
before.
He has. So, but Jay, your story with Brentwood Baptist Church goes a lot further back than just Station Hill. So catch us up about who you are and the ministry God's called you to there at Brentwood, now pastoring at Station Hill.
Yeah, absolutely. So we came to Middle Tennessee almost 18 years ago now. Hard to believe.
You were a young man.
I was a young man, a lot less gray hair. But I came as the student minister at Brentwood Baptist Church. We were in transition from becoming a community church to a larger church at the time. And so learned a lot of fascinating things on that journey. One of them was that in Nash, Vegas, you can't out-entertain, you know, the entertainment industry.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And so we really began to focus on how we disciple and release kids to serve on mission. And so that was quite an interesting process, whole story in and of itself. But what I didn't realize that God was doing the whole time was preparing me to launch a new campus, a new work in a community in which we had purchased a home. Yeah. So when we moved to Middle Tennessee, we couldn't afford to live in the Brentwood area on a youth pastor salary. So we bought a house 30 minutes out. And I really had one of those, God, what are you doing? You know, why in the world would you put me way out here when you know I love to be at the ball games and the coffee shops? But lo and behold, God dropped us in the middle of a mission field.
Yeah.
And my wife, who was not raised in a Christian home, but does an incredible job because of that, of seeing the needs and the people who were just like her growing up, begins to reach out to ladies in our neighborhood, having them over for dinner. She starts a women's Bible study, and she begins to, as I'm very busy with church stuff, say, there's a whole mission field right here in our backyard. Yeah. And so God began to turn our heart towards our own community. Well, at Brentwood, we had just continued to grow exponentially. We're trying to figure out how we grow beyond building more buildings. And so this whole multi-site thing had come into focus.
Yeah.
And so as God would bring all these streams together in the river, we had a growing community. We had a number of growing families who were living in the same community I was, commuting to church, who said, we've got friends and neighbors. We want to invite them to church as well. But when we do, it's too far, it's too big, it's too all of these things.
Yeah.
So what if we brought the church to them? So from day one, I was able to lead a group of people who really got the mission of the church, but understood how that connected to the topic of the day was the fact that these people needed to be reached, but they needed to become disciples of Jesus.
Yeah.
And so we launched with 50 families, so we had about 100 adults, but we had 73 preschoolers and children on our launch team. So we had a lot of kids from day one.
That's awesome.
And that kind of plays into the fact that we all kind of had to buy into the same philosophy. philosophy of how we were going to approach worship and discipleship and mission. And I had this conviction from my years on church staff that we needed to break down some of the silos that existed between those areas.
Are you saying, and on some church staffs, that the music ministry, the discipleship ministry, the kids ministry, student ministry aren't always working with each other? But kind of,
I mean, I know that's hard
to believe. Does that happen some places?
It does happen.
Yeah, it does happen. Keep going. I interrupted you.
Yeah. No. So we launched out of Brentwood in 2010 with about, you know, I said about 100 adults. Just to fast forward, God has been incredibly gracious to us. You know, we'll have about 1,600 on campus this coming Sunday.
Well, and I've been excited as a part of Brentwood Baptist Church to watch this whole thing happen. I mean, when I first came to Brentwood Baptist 11 years ago, 12 years ago, something like
it's
that.
It's been a while.
You were still very much part of that main campus and, of course, preaching from time to time, and I was aware of your ministry just that way. And then watching the whole Station Hill thing develop, and many of my close friends and musicians that I've served with there at Brentwood became part of that team that goes south. And I remember prayer walking that land.
I do remember that.
I do, and you and I were together that day, and I remember I prayed over you that day. But just, and now to drive out there and to see. And of course, it was when that building first was dreamed about and that land was first occupied, there weren't really a lot of houses around there.
No. We were able to purchase a land at a good price, but of course, it was kind of on the edge of town, the developing edge of town. And now, right, they
the
continue to just drop neighborhood after neighborhood,
unbelievable.
Apartment complex after apartment complex. So, you know, you think God has a plan or something.
Yeah, exactly. And that church, and just see what God's done there. The reason I wanted to bring you in to talk to our audience today is because of something that has from the beginning been in the DNA of the church and what God has done at the church at Station Hill. And I was thinking about this analogy, Brian. Have you ever built a house, Brian?
Actually, I have. When I was 16 years old, I helped build a house.
You helped build a house.
I wasn't alone.
All right. So somebody told me one time, Jay, I don't know if you would agree with this, but somebody told me once, you have to build three houses. And when I say build, I'm not talking about with the hammer in your hand. I'm talking about designing it. You have to build three before you get one that's almost what you wanted to have when you start with. Somebody told me that one time. And I guess I've been a part since moving here and there. I've been a part of building a few houses. There's an advantage to starting something and knowing when you start it what you want it to become. Mm-hmm. And when a mothership like Brentwood Baptist starts a campus from it, it's not like just an organic group of people that go to a movie theater and just start a church. There's a lot more intentionality about how this happens. So, Jay, refresh my memory. I think some of the church leaders listening to this might be interested to hear. How long was the congregation of Station Hill starting to be formed at the mother campus before the church actually became a church? Talk about that process.
The long answer, I mean, it's years, because there were relationships being formed, people being discipled, going back probably a decade in some of the things that God would weave together and bring together. The shorter answer is we voted in November of 2008 to launch our first campus, which would be the church at Station Hill. We asked people to come with a launch team in January of 2009. We trained for about a full year, and then we launched in early 2010.
Okay.
And so there was a process, but we met that whole time. We took that core team through every aspect of our church.
Right.
So even people, for instance, who are interested in leading worship, who we have some great musicians, but we taught them, for instance, how to do preschool ministry. We taught them how to do guest services, because we wanted everybody to know how every part of the body functioned.
That's good.
So that year was really good training time for us. And then we had a Sunday night service. And so this may be another idea for some of the churches out there, that was kind of on life support, kind of struggling, and the church leadership handed it to us and said, here's a lab.
Yeah.
And so it already had a couple hundred people coming to it. We were able to bring our 100 people to it, and it gave us a great six-month lab to develop our greeting teams, to develop our worship team, you know, for me to be able to communicate to our people. And to give people something to check out. So those lab-type experiences before you launch are really valuable.
Yeah.
So, Jay, I'm interested in the transition from Brentwood Baptist to the new campus. You had the Sunday night service, which I love, by the way. I'm a big fan of Sunday night church, and I'm so glad you guys kept that going there as a lab. I love the way that you said that. So when you transitioned your congregation to the new, tell us about that first Sunday, what preparation you did to invite the community there at Station Hill, and how you guys got ready for the launch of that first Sunday.
Yeah, there had been a lot of the traditional kind of church marketing, church start stuff done in a growing, you know, suburban community. So honestly, we really just doubled down on word of mouth. Mm-hmm. We really encouraged people to invite their neighbors, you know, the ones that they had felt compelled to reach in the first place, to go have people over for barbecues in their backyard and for dinner in their homes, that kind of thing. So we really kind of wanted to be more viral with that launch. And so we were our initial meeting place was in a middle school cafetorium. Mm. Yeah. I mean, sticky gum under the chairs and all, right? It was not glamorous, but we had over 300 people show up for that very first service.
Wow.
Because I think our people really took hold and owned the mission from day one. And, you know, part of that mission was that we wanted to be as unified as possible. Mm. So we only had one worship service for those first couple of months,
right?
Because we wanted to build that momentum. We didn't offer a lot of other programming on Sunday mornings. There was no adult Bible studies. There wasn't anything but preschool. And eventually we started to add then children's ministry and then student ministry and then some offerings for adults on Sunday mornings. But we had such a young congregation, we wanted to have them all experiencing the same thing in worship, because I think there's nothing that brings you together like worship. And so when we were able to lease a facility across the street and move into that, that had a small worship center, we knew we were going to have to move to two services, but we decided right away that we wanted those services to be identical. We wanted people, even if they were coming to a different hour, to have a shared experience. And a lot of our small groups, our discipleship ministry, is linked to our worship ministry, because the small groups in their groups, you know, take the next step with the sermon that's preached, the topic and the sermon text for that day. So we tried to link all those things real intentionally from day one.
Yeah. So talk to me. I know you spoke about you've been in ministry a while before you got to Brentwood Baptist Church, before you got to the Middle Tennessee area. Were you ever a part of a church where the worship services were materially different? Were you a part of a church? And what would you say would be the pros and cons of worship services that are identical the way you guys intentionally built it at Church Station Hill, and other ministries you've served that might be transitioning and might have a traditional service, a blended service, and all of these definitions, of course, are so malleable. Have you served in that environment? And if so, what do you think the strengths and weaknesses are of those two approaches?
I had not served on staff at a church that had different worship expressions, but traveling, speaking, doing a lot of youth work, did some mission work, saw a variety of different contexts. So I saw pros and cons both ways. Obviously, I think the intent behind having different styles of worship is good. The heartbeat there is let's reach different people, let's reach a different demographic. I think the unintended consequence, and that's what happens a lot, right, with our strategies. There's an old quote, love your mission, but only like your methods, because they're going to have to change.
Yeah.
So you know, I think in an attempt to elevate the mission of the church, sometimes we subtly elevate the method, meaning the preference, the worship style, those kind of things. And so I think that's where you get into the danger zone a little bit, is because people will say, well, I'll only come to church if it's this expression of worship. Mm. I'll only come to church if it's this style of music. It's a preference. I mean, we all have preferences, you know, right. And that's an okay thing. But you've got to be willing to surrender that for the sake of the mission. I think there's pros and cons either way. I think a transitioning church, you know, when you're trying to shepherd a church towards a more unified worship style, I think there are some things you can do there. But I think, again, the ideal is that there's you know, you see, for instance, I'm teaching on Revelation chapter 5 tonight, you know, and the fact that the picture that John gets there is of the universal church, you know, every tribe, every tongue, every language, every ethnic group, all represented there. And so I think that unifying aspect is something we've forgotten about. And if we're not careful, we overplay to cultural preferences. And in doing so, we create consumers instead of worshipers.
Right. So in your community, were you intentional? Have you been intentional? Have you faced least the multi-ethnic issue, the multi-generational issue. You said you guys worship together for the beginning, which I love. Communities tend to be a little bit homogenous, and yeah. I don't know if you find that in Station Hill or how yeah. you've tried to be intentional
yeah,
about
definitely
expanding the
multi-generational group. Was an intentional effort from us day number one. One of the interesting things about our community was it exploded. It's a suburban, you know, community, and so exploded with people moving to Middle Tennessee primarily with young families, you know, and they wanted to live where we live because there's good schools.
Yeah.
So that meant there were a lot of people who had moved from Colorado, from California, from the upper Midwest, and so they moved here, but no grandmas and grandpas, no aunts and uncles. Mm. If they had a spiritual root system, they were now disconnected from it.
Yeah.
And
wow.
so we realized we had a real opportunity because among our launch team, we had a good core of senior adults.
Oh,
so we
wow.
prayed for day number one, right? That the Lord would continue to strengthen that senior adult ministry, and he did. And we were able to attract a number of young families who said, we've been to several of the churches in town, and they're good, but they're all young families.
Yeah.
We need, you know, the Titus II model in
yeah,
our life.
Wow.
We need spiritual
so
grandmas
important.
And grandpas for our kids. So, you know, we look around and we see some gray hair, and we like that.
And worshiping together, you know.
That's where they're
yeah,
going to see
oh,
it
man.
When they walk in the door.
Yeah, that's know? So critical. One thing you said early on that I want to go back to if we can, Jay, you talked about launching, first of all, in a facility, a school facility, not ideal, one service, and you didn't have all of these other ministries. You had 70-something preschoolers, so
right.
you had to have something
had to have
for
preschool
them.
Ministry.
But other than that, you didn't. And it reminds me of a saying kind of in the music industry in Nashville, particularly the Christian music industry. There's so many young people that want to get started,
Right.
How do I get started? Number one question any Christian artist gets asked after their concert is, how do I get started? And the answer is always, get started. And so you guys, it sounds like you took that same approach to ministry, even after having the support of Brentwood Baptist, even
Absolutely.
After having a whole year to chain
yep.
and a six-month lab on the Sunday nights at the Brentwood Baptist cabin, you still weren't ready to launch in a fully realized facility with fully realized ministry.
No.
So the decision, though, was to launch anyway. So why do you launch there when some people say, oh, man, you guys weren't ready. You could only pull off one
yeah,
service.
It's like people who say, well, don't get married till you're financially secure or don't have kids until you've got, you know. I mean,
yeah.
at some point, right, you just have to step out there. Our senior pastor says, inch over your head, mile over your head. You're in over your head, right?
That's good.
So, you know, there are certain things you only learn. And, of course, you want to be discerning, you know, and there's a lot of factors that go into that. But for us, we, you know, part of it was our people were chomping at the bit to reach their neighbors. And so there comes the point where you say, you know what, we're going to step out there on faith and we're going to find ways to make this work together. And so at some point you just have to take that step. And so we were able to take that step again. I feel like we were at a good point in our spiritual development. But at some point, if you've ever helped your kid learn how to ride a bike, right, you have to,
yeah.
you got to let go of the back of that banana seat and let them roll,
yeah.
you know? And so the church was able to do that with us. And again, we, by the grace of God, had a lot of great people who stepped up right away. And that's another reason, by the way, for church multiplication. As Mike mentioned, we're part of a great church.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
there's only, when you're part of a big church, there's only so many people who get to express their God-given spiritual gifts and abilities. So what multiplication does is it thrusts out, you know, a lot of people. It creates a lot of more opportunities for service, and people discover, hey, this is what God made me for, you know?
Yeah.
And that's been one of the most exciting things to see. One story that we're seeing play out right now is we have now launched our first congregation out of Station Hill. We've
oh,
helped
wow.
plant a church.
I was going there next.
Yep,
I'm so glad you did.
We plant a church in College Grove that's called the Grove Hill Church, College Grove and Chapel Hill, and it's kind of right in between them. So they kind of took from our name.
Yeah.
And so one of the fun things right now is to see, for instance, this past Sunday, one of our former deacons at Station Hill was just ordained as their first associate pastor.
Wow.
And so to watch God do that in multiple areas of ministry is incredible. Another quick story. The media ministry at Brentwood had grown, obviously, exponentially over the years.
Sure.
There was a man who had a student, was a friend of mine. I noticed I didn't see him helping with media anymore. So I sought him out. And I said, hey, buddy, I miss seeing you, you know, serving. What's up? He said, well, we grew. We hired professionals to do what I used to do as a volunteer. The big church didn't need me anymore. And I said, well, guess what? I need you.
Yeah,
and
sure.
So here's what's funny. He lives within eyesight of the steeple of the Brentwood campus, but he gets on his motorcycle at 6 o'clock every Sunday morning, drives 30 miles south to run media for us. So in other words, people who have, you know, looking for a place to serve, when you multiply, it creates those kind of opportunities.
Oh, man, that's fantastic.
All right, so Brian, we're getting real close to the subject that I brought him in here to talk about.
Good. All right. It may take another podcast to finish it.
It's such so helpful to hear you guys talk about this. So in setting the DNA of a ministry, one of the values that I've observed from a distance is this value of the place that the family has in the discipleship process of their kids.
Yeah.
And I would call it a family discipleship model. Mm-hmm. And the person listening may not have ever seen quite what I'm talking about, might say, well, of course, family discipleship. But it really is, that's a lot. You're saying a lot when you say that. So for just a second, and then we're going to migrate into the worship context of that. But for just a second, talk about this idea, your understanding that the church at Station Hill is a rallying place for families, and you are equipping families to disciple their kids.
Yeah. Yeah. The home is the foundational unit of discipleship in the church. And one of the things I realized, especially coming to Brentwood as youth pastor, the bigger the church, the more the programs, the easier it is for parents to abdicate their role to the local church. And so church leadership, that was one of the challenges that they gave me. So again, one of the ways God prepares you is I served some time as the next generation minister overseeing preschool through college before we launched Station Hill. And one of the things that I discovered was some eye-opening statistics. We did a survey. Only a third of our families were actually talking about faith in the home, having some kind of family devotion, Bible reading time, something, right? And so we knew, whoa, we've missed something. But then you begin to realize we got to own that, because a big church will create that beast. Any church will create that beast.
Yeah.
Our programs are great. You know, our opportunities are great. And you think about it, parents in our culture are trained to outsource everything.
Absolutely.
So I take my kids to the Y for recreation. They, you know, private or public school for their education. Mm-hmm. You know, they have all of it. So yeah, you guys have these great programs. You're seminary trained professionals. Yeah. I don't want to mess up my kids' spiritual development. Yeah. So I'm going to leave that to you. Well, of course, the myth there is that, you know, you can't meaningfully disciple hundreds of children or students.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus had 12. I remind people about that all the time. Yeah. So what God intended was for the church to be built on these building blocks of healthy and strong homes and families. And so we really had to go back. Deuteronomy 6 became the passage that we really began to point back to, where immediately after the great command, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength, Moses told the people, and of course Jesus quoted it later, but it was, impress these truths upon your children. And that word impress is actually literally chisel. Mm. So in the Hebrew, so it means to make an inscription. And as you know, with children, you have to repeat the same lessons over and over to leave an impression. So we began to realize that an hour or two at church in our programs, as good as they could be, and we didn't want to de-emphasize what happened at the church. That's a pendulum some other churches have swung to that we couldn't get on board with.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to de-elevate what happens in the church, but what we wanted to do was radically elevate what was also happening in the home, so that our disciple makers at church and our parents were working as co-champions to develop faith in the home. And so giving parents baby steps, you know, here's three questions that go with the sermon. We used to print those in the bulletin. So a dad in particular can just go home and say, Pastor Jay talked about this. Boom, here, you know, here's three questions that went with today's sermon right at Sunday lunch. It's a win for a dad to be a spiritual leader in
his
home. You know, so some of those kind of things we begin to experiment with. When our kids went to camp, we would give the parents the same Bible study we were doing with the kids so they could have those spiritual conversations, easy wins when they got home. Of course, addressing hot topics like sexuality, technology, helping parents get biblical handles for those things. That was a part of it. But, you know, and what was amazing was there's been this movement, you know, really beyond denominations and beyond churches. I mean, you know, it's a movement of churches that are recovering this idea.
Yeah.
And it's been exciting to be a part of that. And, of course, that has an expression in the worship gathering us.
Yeah. So we get into the worship aspect of this idea. You know, I've been a church staff guy for a long time, just like you have, and I guess one of the things that we learned along the way by default in serving churches is that no matter how awesome what we did at the church was, we could not undo in 2 hours what it was happening the rest of the week in their families.
That's exactly right.
And if the church could equip the family to be healthy disciples themselves, starts right there, and then equip them to be disciple makers in their own family in that smallest circle of influence. Now they begin to look outside their own family into their neighbor's house, the next house, the next house. And then all these families come together into a single place of a corporate expression.
Yeah.
That becomes the overflow of what's happening in the individual families across. And I mean, real life change and impact is happening.
Yeah.
So there, that has an expression. When you think about a philosophy like that, we're going to equip our families to disciple their kids. That has an expression in the way the church worships together.
Absolutely.
And I wanted you to unpack it a little bit about what that looks like at Station Hill.
Yeah.
What does worship look like in a church that highlights and emphasizes the family structure as the main discipling force?
So, for one, we don't have separate children's church or student church or those kind of things. We do provide, of course, child care. You know, kids 4 years oldish, you know, we provide
through pre-K. But Pastor Jay, I want to listen to your sermon. I don't want to be distracted by my six-year-old that's sitting here. He's a distraction to me when I'm when I'm in worship. I mean, I want to hear the sermon.
Yeah, you want to jump right into those practicals, don't you? Here you go. So a couple of things, right? Yeah. One is our team provides a guide for that child that syncs up with that sermon. So there's something for them, a picture to color. You know, again, it's a word find with words from the sermon that day, from that sermon text, those kind of things. So we give them some instruction. We have a great preschool and children's team who help equip parents in some workshops. Here's how you help navigate your kid in worship. Let me give you a practical example. I have a 10-year-old son, right? Yeah. He's very creative, but I notice he's doodling, he's drawing, which is fine if that helps keep him engaged. But I found some blank comic pages. We're preaching through the Gospel of Mark right now. I said, hey, buddy, I want you to draw out the scenes. And man, I've gotten some of the hilarious, but also insightful from the mind of a 10-year-old, you know, scenes in the life of Jesus from the Gospel of Mark that I'm going to bind together and put in a book for him. So with a little thought and intentionality is my point. You can help and focus your kid. But here's one thing we learned, and I found the research to back this up. Kids learn by being a part of the worship community more than you ever think that they do.
Absolutely.
Do they remember every word I say?
No.
But they...
Do they even understand every word you say?
No. Absolutely not. But they know we stand up in our church when we read God's word. That means we're giving it on.
Absolutely.
So at the very end of all of our services at Station Hill, my very last thing, my kind of benediction to them is you are loved and you are sent on mission. And we have these four-year-olds who toddle up to me and say, you are loved and you are sent, right?
Great.
You know, they
Isn't
pick that up. The Lord's Supper, another great illustration.
Oh, yeah.
What a teachable moment for your child. As a matter of fact, it was my son. It was on a Lord's Supper Sunday that started the conversation to which he made the decision to put his trust in Christ. Came out of a Sunday in which we did the Lord's Supper, and we came home and talked about what that looked like. And then the next Sunday, he came down front. That was an incredible moment for his dad to be ministering to people. And the next one in line is your son who's ready to profess faith in Jesus. So, so there are so many teachable moments is what I would say in that moment. And part of it is we have to help parents get over the idea. And as pastors and worship leaders, we have to communicate this. A little moving around the room is not going to bother us.
Right.
We are so glad that there is life here. We are so glad that your children and grandchildren are with you in worship. As a matter of fact, what we find is it's really the parents who are more embarrassed or bothered that their kids make a noise.
And nobody
so
else
we
is.
Just have to give them permission. Nobody else is bothered by that the way they are. So part of that is creating the culture and the expectation. And when other parents see other parents with their kids, you know. And here's the deal. If a kindergartner can sit through at least a half day of school, they can sit through 60 minutes or 70 minutes, in which, by the way, we have to work as worship leaders to be sure that, you know, there's a variety of songs and expressions and prayer time and, you know, that it's not all a static experience for them. Even in the preaching and the communication of God's word, you know, I'm putting visuals up on the screen or I'm, you know, having the congregation feed some things back to me. Like, it makes us better communicators, and I think that's better for mom and dad and grandma and grandpa too.
I totally agree. So, Jay, I mean, I'm sitting here just about to have church listening to you talk about this because you're into something. As a staff member, I've been a part of the teams that have decided, you know, let's take the kids out and let them do their thing over here. I've made that decision before, but I've come to the place where kids are learning so much from their parents and the way their parents engage.
That's
as important as anything that the pastor's saying or anything.
I can close my eyes and still hear my dad sing Amazing Grace.
Absolutely.
I can close my eyes and see my grandfather as a deacon praying before the offering. Mm. Things that again, I might not have totally grasped when I was a kid, but now have deep, you know, that helps my faith roots go deep.
So we're out of time on this podcast, except for Tony Price, who runs marathons to our podcast. He always likes them when they're real
He's
long.
He's still running.
So Tony, you still got about 10 miles to go. But what I want to do is let Brian wrap this one up, and we're going to pick up this conversation in the next one.
Great.
We're going to start right there about the corporate worship experience for family and what that looks like and what are the positives and the things that we can aspire for in a corporate worship setting with families. That's next. So Brian,
I can't wait for that next podcast with Jay Strother. We thank you for joining us today on the Worship Life podcast with Mike Harlan. We hope you'll keep the conversation going at worshiplife.com. We'd love to engage with you there. Also through social media, whether it be Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, whatever your favorite place to engage in the conversation about worship in the church, we want to join you there. As always, you can email us, worship@lifeway.com. We love to pray for you and your ministry specifically, so email us, worship@lifeway.com. Tell us how we can pray for you, your family, and your ministry specifically. Until next time, for Mike Harlan, this is Brian Brown saying thanks for joining us on the Worship Life podcast. We look forward to getting back together and talking about worship and music ministry with you again very soon.